And now we're back with part two of our interview with director John Cameron Mitchell.
Speaking of the actors, how important was it? I mean, you had two very experienced leads, Nicole Kidman and Aaron Eckhart. How important was it for them to establish their relationship, you know, as you were filming and in pre-production, because their relationship really is the crux of the whole film?
That was easy. Nicole and Aaron are virtuosos. They know their craft. There wasn't a lot of discussion. It wasn't a lot of rehearsal. You can definitely over-rehearse scenes of emotional weight like this. It was just, we talked a little about backstory. We talked about blocking at times. I never allowed them to do the scene full out without shooting. Oftentimes you have camera rehearsals that you don't shoot, and you lose some of your best performances. So they loved that. Shoot rehearsals, do as many takes as we can, shoot on a digital format, the red camera, which at first I resisted but then realized was my friend, because you didn't have to cut. You know, you could do the scene over and over and over without cutting and losing the energy. And that momentum would often get Nicole and Aaron and Diane to these places that they may not have got to with such ease if you had to keep, you know, if the film kept rolling out. So that was an advantage. Shooting multiple cameras, oftentimes shooting over each other's shoulders, you know, shooting both ways in the room, which is difficult for a DP to light, really, you know, actors take to that like ducks to water, because they're never acting off camera. They never feel like they're over doing too many takes, you know, getting spent. Lighting for the whole scene, so you don't have to relight all the time when you go to a close-up. These are tricks that I've learned over the years that really help actors to be less distracted by the technical aspects.
On the other end of the spectrum, you had a relatively new actor, Miles Teller, in such a vital role. How did you manage, or maybe it was partly his acting ability? He has such a subtle, understated performance in the film that is, you know, sort of a key turning point for Nicole. How was it working with him, being a newcomer?
Well, he came out of nowhere. We almost he almost slipped through the cracks. You know, he wasn't flagged as one of the, you know, stars of the future, pretty boys that were pushed forward by agents. And luckily I watched every tape, and he just jumped out at me as this super real guy. You know, that character cannot be a pretty Hollywood-looking boy, no matter how good he is, because he's got to be this outsider. I hate these movies where there's unreasonable standards of beauty for, you know, the cleaning lady in that one scene or whatever it is, which is a very American thing to do. To me, his eyes said everything. He was at NYU. We plucked him out of school. He was scared, you know, the prospect of working with these big people, but I did everything I could, hung out with them, you know, encouraged him to come to set when he didn't need to. Nicole preferred not to hang out with him because she likes that, the energy, the tension of letting that happen on camera, which made him a little nervous, but I think he was able to control the nerves and push them into the character rather than make let the actor nerves bother him. And I just did a lot of hand-holding and talking to him and encouraging, whereas, you know, Nicole is more self-sufficient, you know, she has her processes more personal. But with a young guy like that, I gave him a lot of support. And, you know, he's dealt with tragedy in his own life. He lost his best friends in an accident a year before we shot. So that he'd seen things before his time, and it comes out in those scenes. I think he's unbelievable. He's just shockingly empathetic in this.
Yeah, I'd definitely have to agree. He's a standout, which is really hard to do with so many established actors in the film. You mentioned something about the lighting, being able to light everything, and in some ways it feels, Rabbit Hole feels like a spiritual successor to maybe some of Bergman's films, with the lighting and with the focus on characters and faces and the small things that a face can convey. How did you guys go about the technical aspect of lighting it naturally, but it's also like it's perpetually cloudy outside maybe, sort of like how the characters feel?
It's interesting. My DP, who I've worked with on everything, including Hedwig and including Dior ads with Marianne Cotillard that I'm doing now, it adapts very individually for whatever's necessary. And in this case, we were very lucky. A DP's favorite day is a cloudy day. You know, when it's very sunny, you can't match the sun on both sides mm-hmm. during a day because it moves. The hardness of sunlight with the shadow is hard to capture on a digital format. Film is better at it. In our case, we had this match. We were lucky. You know, we found these cloudy, soft days, summer days that captured the tone of the film. And it, we used older lenses to sort of soften the harder aspects of digital, lenses from the 80s. And we, again, tried not to get too self-conscious about camera angles and dolly shots so that you're not thinking about who is shooting at you. You know, you're really focusing on faces. Nicole was not concerned with how she looked. I feel, in a way, this is her most grounded, unadorned performance. I loved her in Dogville, but there's something adult and less ethereal about her now that she has a child late in life and a great relationship, and she's 43, and I think she's moving into a whole other realm of performance that's more raw and kind of freer of sort of necessities of glamour, which women are often forced into in our country, in the way that even, you know, Diane Wiest, you know, we found out about her later in life, you know, her career, you know, Hannah and her sister, she was already into her prime, and now she's become, you know, our national treasure. I think Nicole is moving into that place where Diane Wiest and Meryl Streep reside now as, you know, our mistresses of the craft.
Great. I have a feeling that
yeah, I think
guys...
I'm getting waved at.
Oh, okay. Well, just a couple more questions real quick. How did you guys go about finding an ending that was, you know, had such a realistic amount of hope? It doesn't wrap up neatly. It doesn't become utterly despairing. What was the key to finding the right amount of hope there?
Well, you know, the ending is the same ending as in the play, where they imagine a possible future, you know, a parallel universe, if you will, of what's going to happen next. And it's a moment-to-moment thing, a cookout. We're going to invite the people who have avoided us. We're going to invite our family members. We're going to talk about our child. We're going to talk about their children. We're going to pretend to be interested. And then they're going to go home. And Nicole asks, and then what? He's like, I don't know. Something. Something, though. And you see them seated, looking at the water at the end of the day. And she takes his hand. And it's a simple moment. It's in the play. And it's a moment that's so powerful for me that I can say safely that I wouldn't have wanted to make the film if she hadn't taken his hand. And I actually removed the final line of the play to make it even more complex. The final line of play is actually, we'll figure it out, which we don't know. We don't know that. You know, we think they're going to make it. There's a lot of hope at the end, but there's no false hope. You know, it's hopefully earned hope. And that is necessary in any story that I put into the world. There's plenty of evidence that the world is a dark place. That there's no point in reinforcing that without any kind of hope. And this, for me, is a very hopeful film that I hope other people will find useful.
I think they will. One last quick question for you. It's one that we ask every filmmaker that we interview. What, for you, are your most truly moving pictures? Which films move you or maybe force you to think about the world differently or inspire you as you make films?
You know, my favorite films, of course, are the most moving. Some people's favorite films are the ones that scare them. But this, you know, to me, the most moving films I've seen, A Woman Under the Influence, Cassavetes' film with Jenna Rollins, and one of the best performances ever on screen. Fanny and Alexander, you mentioned Ingmar Bergman. I love that film. I just feel like it's the scariest Christmas film full of love that I've ever seen. Knights of Cabiria.
Oh, yeah.
Very moving when she's gives love one more chance at the end. And Being There,
okay,
which I hadn't seen in a while, and has a lovely elegiac, you know, comedic feeling. So I'd say those four.
Wonderful. Well, John, it's been a true pleasure for me speaking with you today. Congratulations again on winning the Truly Moving Picture Award, and I wish you all the best. I have a feeling we won't forget about Rabbit Hole come Oscar time. So best of luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was John Cameron Mitchell speaking with us today about his new film, Rabbit Hole, a recent winner of the Truly Moving Picture Award. Rabbit Hole opens December 17th in select cities and will expand throughout the next month. Check in at trulymovingpictures.org for more information. We'd like to thank Lionsgate Entertainment and John Cameron Mitchell for their time today and for crafting such a thoughtful film.